The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
I'm joined this morning by Louisa Meehan of Woodview HRM, Mark Hennessy, Ireland and Britain editor with the Irish Times, and Paul Gallagher, general manager of Buzzwells Hotel and incoming chief executive of the Irish Hotels Federation. And where we might start is to pick up with what Patrick O'Donovan was talking about there, which was the impact of that poll and the significance of it. Mark, let me kick off with you. 4% in 2 weeks is the kind of thing I would have thought that will have concerns raising to panic levels within Fine Gael.
Well, I'm not sure if it'll be panic, but it'll certainly be concern. It hasn't been a great campaign for them. Fine Gael has had a record over the last 20 or 30 years of very patchy campaign performances, and this one is in that model.
But I thought we had a sense that this was the Energizer Bunny, that Simon Harris was the new Bertie Ahern when it came to campaigning, and all would be well.
Yeah, well, I mean, the problem that Fine Gael have is that the public has only started to get engaged in the last 48 hours in the election at all. And the first thing that they see once they're engaged is the video that has gone viral from Kentork. And clearly he didn't handle it well. And clearly, as he said afterwards, he in long day, tired, etc. Fine, you know, we accept all of that. But nevertheless, the people at the centre of it are unhappy, and every carer is going to be unhappy. And these things do get a lifespan of their own. And he has tried to neutralise it by the apology, by offering to meet and all of the rest of that. That is an attempt to recover ground, and it'll have some effect, but probably not a great deal. So there are defining moments. It's not quite on the same scale as Gordon Brown and Rochdale in the 2010 election and whatnot, but it is nevertheless something that's going to be used by, and you saw it in your own headlines there at 10 o'clock, where all the opposition parties are saying that it highlights Fine Gael's attitude to carers, etc. So, you know, it offers.
And of course, the difference in Rochdale, at least, was there was other stuff in that campaign that drew some attention, whereas in this, it has been notable for the lack of anything of any particular public significance, and this is standing out.
That's the point. I mean, it's a moment against a very dull campaign, and a campaign from which the public have been extraordinarily disengaged. And it has to be said also that I'm puzzled by particularly Fine Gael's campaign strategy. And to a degree, you can say this about all of the parties, but it's probably most acute given the kind of cohort of people that Fine Gael are going for. The manifesto pledges that have been made by all parties are complete and utter nonsense. And we are looking at a situation where people should just do a small little bit of research on a man called Howard Lutnick, if you haven't heard of him already, the U.S. Commerce, incoming U.S. Commerce Secretary.
Of whom we should be very frightened.
Of whom we should be very frightened. And most people in the country won't have heard of him, understandably. Every time he goes on Twitter, he highlights Ireland's success in terms of corporation tax, and he doesn't see it as a good thing. And he and others are going to make efforts to change that once they're in power.
Now, let us get to this in more detail in a while, because the Business Post has done a very in-depth exercise in looking at the costings of the manifestos and what's realistic and what's not. Let's stay with the poll before that, though. And Louise, I want your view. The Irish Daily Mail, or the Mail on Sunday, I should say, has on the front page, on the banner, "Carer, Harris made me feel like a silly, stupid girl," and a picture of the Taoiseach in that interaction with Charlotte Fallon in the supermarket in Cork. For those unfamiliar, this was a sort of a chance encounter, hello, how are you? And she began to criticise lack of investment in disability services.
Yeah.
Wasn't
well,
that it?
This was certainly looking like a chance encounter. Whether or not it was, I think, is up for question. I think it's interesting that this is in relation to disability, because Simon Harris can be criticised for a lot, but at the end of the day, Simon Harris and his family, his brother Adam Harris is the CEO and the creator of As I Am. They do an enormous amount of charitable work for people with disabilities across the country. And the reason that he's involved in that is because he has autism, and because his parents were some of the first advocates for people with autism in this country. So he comes from a history and a family history of working for supporting individuals with disability.
So why wasn't this an open goal for him then?
So I think it is that he was tired. I think it was a misstep, but I do think that this is being overplayed because, I don't know if it's just me, but this political, you know, election campaign is very boring. So I think the this was something to talk about that there wasn't something previously, but at the crux of it, you know, I'm not sure that we can criticise him for his commitment to disability. Can you criticise some of the policies? Can you criticise some of the outputs? Can you say that we need to do more and there needs to be more investment and we need to talk to carers? Of course you can. It's imperfect. But is he committed to doing it right? I don't think he has ever shown anything other than that.
I suppose the difficulty, Paul Gallagher, will be the level of traction that this is getting. 2.5 million views thus far, which is more, we are told, according to some of the papers, than the combined totality of views for every other video together that the party has put out.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Simon's a particularly smooth politician, so, and he's brought a lot of energy into Fine Gael. I think, you know, it's just one of those slips. He didn't intend to do what he did, and now regrets it hugely, like any politician would. I think it'll move on. I'm sure by Monday or Tuesday there'll be a new story. One of the real issues for Fine Gael is they have 18 retiring TDs in the Dáil, and that is a drag on their performance. But I mean, notably that this Sunday Times poll was taken before Simon Harris's slip up in Cantor.
Before they get in touch, I should say Sunday Independent.
Sorry, Sunday Independent. Before the slip up. So, I mean, I think, you know, it's a snapshot in time, but I wouldn't put too much faith into polls. We saw that in the States with Trump. You know, that there were seven swing states and they were neck and neck. There was no neck and neck anywhere in the end. He was very comfortable in nearly all of them.
It was clear in the run-up to that that most of the polling was national rather than swing state, and there wasn't much good polling from the swing states. And the national was broadly accurate.
Yeah.
So in terms of the breakdown of the poll then, the were minus four for Fine Gael. Any other particular numbers from it that stood out to you, Paul?
It says Fianna Fáil at 20, I think, no change. No, overall, I thought, you know, the polls kind of reflect a moment in time of a dull campaign. You know, everybody's going to get a little bit of everything from these manifestos. In fact, we're awash with money. Obviously, the biggest hole would be in the Sinn Féin manifesto. I think they're going to spend about $85 billion. But the whole thing is predicated on continued corporate finance tax receipts. And the real worry is, will that change dramatically? You know, we're going to have a surplus of around $10 billion next year. Growing and continuing up to 2030. That assumes that everything stays pretty much the same and Ireland is going to be immune from any decisions taken in the States. So I'd be a wee bit worried that, you know, we're spending, and a lot of it's going to be day-to-day rather than infrastructural, and we need infrastructure spending, not day-to-day spending.
Mark?
Yeah, just one point that is worth bringing out. I mean, Sinn Féin are up by 2 points, and there's no doubt that things have settled within Sinn Féin. Talking to people in the week or so running into the election, it's fair to say that they were pretty bothered.
And this has the look of a bit of momentum forming.
Yeah, no, well, definitely. I mean, they're certainly in a far better shape, and they certainly think that they're going to hold the seats that they have. What is a good election for Sinn Féin? It depends, you know, where you want to set the meter, because, you know, a year ago they thought they were going to be in government. A good election for them now would be to come back with what they have, or perhaps with one or two more. And given the kind of figures, they're in that ballpark. There and thereabout. That does not put them in government, and it doesn't make them the lead coalition party as of today. But obviously, you know, the last week of a campaign, and particularly this one, given that people have been so disengaged with it. I mean, I've been just struck in terms of personal conversations with people in my own circle who, you know, don't do this lark for a living. And normally when you're chatting to them during the course of a campaign, the general election would come up in the first 5 minutes of the conversation, and it hasn't appeared anywhere.
Well, this is one of the interesting things in the poll. It does say that roughly 30% of people are in the category of, I've sort of decided, but I may change my mind, or I haven't decided at all. Yeah. So there's still an awful lot to play for as we go into the last week. We look a little bit after the break at how they are playing for that, because as I say, the Business Post has looked at the manifestos, and the way they characterise it is multi-billion euro holes in main party plans. That after the break. With me is Louisa Meehan of Woodview HRM, Mark Hennessy, Ireland and Britain editor with the Irish Times, and Paul Gallagher, general manager of Buswell's Hotel and the incoming CEO of the Irish Hotels Federation. And Paul, you were talking about the level of windfall taxes on which we depend for almost everything at this point. The Business Post has an interesting breakdown of the amount of assumptions that are being made by the parties about those windfall taxes continuing. In other words, if there's any kind of a diminution in corporation tax receipts, all the manifestos go out the window.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Fianna Fáil are talking about, Daniel Murray, I think his piece, about 55 billion, Fine Gael was 56 billion, and Sinn Féin's total manifesto is about 85 billion. But what people don't think about very often is that in 2014, our corporate tax base surplus was 5 billion. Our take was 5 billion. And last year, or certainly last year, sorry, next year, it'll be about 30 billion. I mean, that is extraordinary acceleration in corporate tax receipts. So, you know, if we can ramp up that quickly, is there a possibility it could ramp down quite quickly as well? So we just don't know how, you know, external affairs to Ireland could put a big hole within our take. And I think in the piece, particularly in the Sunday Business Post, they're talking about if it disappeared. I mean, I think they were saying that we would have a deficit next year based on current spending plans of 6.5 billion, growing to 13.2 billion by 2030. So now I don't think we'd ever see a cliff edge where we all dry up in one go. But certainly I think there's a quote, I think John Deasy, particularly in Sunday Business Post, he reworked one of Churchill's quotes, "Never has so much been given to so many by so few." You know, and that really is, this is the giveaway, absolute giveaway manifesto period. I've never seen anything quite like it. And really, it's just silly season. It just ties in nicer with Christmas because I don't believe we can do what they say they're going to throw the money at.
Well, this fits with some of the analysis, and the Churchill quote fits with the where we get the corporation tax from, because the issue that is being pointed out is that thing of, we have 50% of our corporation tax receipts coming from 10 companies, which means literally things like iPhone sales, vaccine sales, they impact on our capacity to keep the lights on generally, yet it is being used for the basis of what the parties are saying they're going to do.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think they're all talking about how much their surplus will be, which is an interesting way to go into an election campaign. I thought, you know, Fine Gael is looking at having a 2025 surplus of 9 billion, Fianna Fáil 9.7 billion, a bit more. Sinn Féin are going to spend more and have a surplus of 4.7 billion. So they're all expecting to have far more money than they actually need for their manifestos. They're all consistently, in different ways, I was looking at it in terms of what the Business Post were talking about around income tax, USC and tax credits. And in short, there's different approaches to it. But in short, they're going to give us more tax credits and taxes less, increase bans. And so we're all going to have more money in our pocket over the next 5 years. But again, this relies on ensuring that we have a stable growth economy over the next 5 years. And anybody in business will tell you that 5 years is a very, very long time.
But a stable growth economy in the real economy, but also a continuation of this slightly, not slightly, literally artificial corporation tax windfall that we are in receipt of.
We are. I mean, the large multinational organisations that are here are very well established here. They like being here. They have invested a huge amount in Ireland. But if the we're more at risk of the politics in the US in that regard than we are in terms of the politics within Ireland or Europe, and we don't have any control over that whatsoever. So if the changes happen in the US that Trump is talking about, then that may have a very significant knock-on impact, and they can relocate their intellectual property without relocating their facilities.
Well, this is the time to bring in Cassandra. Mark, this was the point that you were making about how we should be fearful of the new Commerce Secretary.
Yeah, exactly, because he has focused again and again, and I think we were talking about this some months back, the declaration by the Department of Finance some months ago that with, what, 25 billion in corporation tax, there's a time when you get too much publicity. You know, it's the sort of thing that should have been literally hidden down the back of a sofa if there was a manner in which it could be done, because you trumpet that kind of success, and then everybody else internationally who has been paying half attention starts paying full attention. And the threat isn't to necessarily to US operations that are based in Ireland, physically based in Ireland, physically producing, probably a question about pharma, although its supplies could be sent to markets other than the US. But so it's not about multinational jobs necessarily in Ireland, but it is about things like, as was said, about intellectual property and changes to rules that the Americans would certainly make. Now, given Trump's dominance or coming dominance in Capitol Hill, he has the freedom to make changes this time round that he didn't have previously. Now, and only for 2 years, because we'll have midterm elections, and you have to assume, given that some of the American voters are going to wake up to what Project 25 actually looks like, rather than just dealing with the theory of it, that there'll be a kickback. So he has time, and there will be people in his operation who will want to make changes, and they will want to make changes as quickly as it is possible for them to make. And, you know, I mean, half of those, that sum, as you mentioned, is windfall. And the 10 companies like Medtronic and with their Galway operations and others will not want to be the poster child, because they have to deal with the Trump administration on regulatory issues and a whole variety of other stuff. So they won't need a change to intellectual property rules for them to start making some form of accommodation with the American regime. They'll obviously try to do it in such a way that it maximises their own advantage. But you talk to tax lawyers here, and as one of them said, you know, to one of our people, they're bricking it, quite frankly, because they know that there's trouble coming down the tracks. They don't know how bad it's going to get, but they know that we've reached our high point, or that we're probably very close to it.
So when we then apply that to the manifestos, on the one side, that is the revenue incoming side that we depend on. The other side is then how it's getting deployed. And this, Paul, is where the Business Post has a sort of a breakdown and a rating of the various different manifestos. Now, we have to say, this is through their editorial lens. It isn't BSRI doing it. But nonetheless, they've given sort of points on management of the public financing and taxation, cost of living, housing, all of that. Any notable winners or losers in their view?
Well, I think everybody, like I said earlier on, is going to get something. You know, whilst we're very reliant on corporate tax receipts, at the same time, the government are going to weaken our tax base. So there's a real throwaway for everybody here in the audience. So Fianna Fáil are going to cut the USC from 3% to 1.5%. Sinn Féin are going to abolish the USC on the first 45,000 euros of earning. It would seem that most parties in and around 45,000, and the higher rate will only kick in at around 55,000. So, you know, that's a fair weather forecast. And, you know, clearly, this might have to be reversed pretty quickly. And you saw that with the general election with the Labour Party. There was going to be no more tax, new taxes. And then they do that extraordinary budget where they've gone after everybody, and particularly the farming sector in the UK, feeling very poorly about inheritance tax on farms. So I think what you're seeing now at the moment is sort of a worrying movement towards trying to appease us all and win our votes by putting money in our pockets. And I think we need to be cognizant that that money, we might have to put our hands in our pockets and give it all back pretty quickly.
But it is interesting. I mean, the one thing that most politicians can do is count, to be fair to them. And it is interesting that judging, and they can see what Trump means and as well as everybody else, and yet they think that the way they have to present to the Irish people is to give us a whole load of goodies, because otherwise we won't come to the party. I mean, it's a shocking judgment of the political class upon the voter.
It would be very brave, I would have thought, party to say, well, we are the only ones in the lineup who aren't going to give you anything.
No,
That's a gutsy position to take.
But you look at the kind of people who vote Fine Gael. There is a strategy that Fine Gael could have adopted, which is that there are difficult times coming. You need sensible hands in the tiller, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It wouldn't appeal to everybody in the audience, but they're not appealing to everybody.
I have nothing to promise you but blood, sweat, toil and tears approach.
Yeah, but it would be more likely to appeal to a Fine Gael audience than it would to any other cohort of voter.
We do need to move on from politics, and obviously one of the big news stories this weekend has been the Conor McGregor, or rather I should say the Nikita Hand victory over Conor McGregor in her civil action against him. Before that, one quick thing. Louisa Meehan, what's your view on this? We've all sort of said that this has been a very dull election. Why? There's a text that says the reason the election hasn't featured for anyone is the complete absence of politicians on the canvas. And this is reflected in the poll. 50% of people being polled saying they haven't been canvassed. 5 days from the election in a rural town with not one but two ministers' offices, and not a single canvasser has called to my door yet. And it goes on. And boy, am I ready for them. But why are we all agreed that this is such a dull election? What is it that has caused it not to take off?
Do you know, I think it's really interesting. And I think if you look back at the polls and some of the rankings, even in the Business Post, what you see is that we're quite centric in this country. So the three main political parties have around 20% each. When we look at the polls, Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil are pretty much the same. Sinn Féin's a little bit different. There's so little difference between them that we know we're going to end up with a cohort of the same kind of people back in politics. It's just a matter of, well, which one will have more than the other. The probability is that we're going to end up with Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil, maybe supported by the Greens, or maybe Labour seems to be getting an influx and have been doing a lot of work and having some more young and dynamic people coming in, and a lot of independents. So there's not going to be a seismic shift. You know, in the US, they've gone from Democratic to Republican. Then they might go back to Democrat.
Like, and I can almost hear Sinn Féin roaring, "We're more than willing to provide you with a seismic shift if you give us a shot."
They're more than willing, but the country don't seem to be more than willing to let them. So the polls are not backing them up. And what I found interesting, you were talking there a little bit ago about the rankings in the Business Post. And when we look at they looked at public finances and they looked at taxation. And so how we manage and what we're going to give out. Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil are both sort of 4 out of 10, 5 out of 10 on both sides. Sinn Féin, on the other hand, while they got 6 out of 10 in terms of what they're going to give out, which is amazing, sounds great, they only got 2 out of 10 in terms of how they're going to manage it. And that's the problem.
If you have any views, 53106. And by the way, if you have either been canvassed or not been canvassed, because as I say, that was one of the interesting things in the Ireland Thinks poll, is that 50% of people say nobody has come to their door. Maybe let us know. 53106 at a cost of 30 cent or 087 1400 106 on WhatsApp or at Anton Savage on Blue Sky. After the break, front page of the Sunday Indo, courage and cowardice, the McGregor verdict. Front page of the Mail, I knew that I would win. I simply told the truth. And they claim an exclusive, McGregor's victim, Nikita Hand, speaks to the Mail on Sunday. More after the break. It is the Anton Savage Show. I'm joined by Louisa Meehan of Woodview HRM, Paul Gallagher, General Manager of Buzzwells Hotel and incoming CEO of the Irish Hotels Federation, and Mark Hennessy, Ireland and Britain editor with the Irish Times. I'm also joined by Rachel Murrah, who is CEO of the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre and Rape Crisis Network Ireland is urging retailers, according to the Sunday Times, or rather the Sunday Independent, to stop selling Conor McGregor stout and whiskey products after a civil court jury found him liable last week for the assault of Nikita Hand. We'll get to that in a second. Before that, Nikita Hand and her bravery and the message that it sends to other victims. Rachel, what's your take?
Morning, Anton. Hello, everyone. Well, it's an exceptional message, really, of hope. I think that people who are going through the justice system and taking the legal route, which, of course, isn't everyone who's experienced sexual violence, but that there is light at the end of the tunnel. And I think that Nikita had a particularly difficult experience. I think that the way that her experience in court was reported and that kind of always on rolling news coverage meant that everybody in Ireland and even across the globe had insight into the court process, and some really intimate details were shared. And we saw the ugly side of that on social media as well, that people were kind of raking through that evidence and giving their own commentary alongside it. But the verdict was hugely positive, and I think that it does send a really strong message to survivors that they will be believed and that they were in no way to blame for anything that happened to them. So the people who we work with have been in touch with us on the National Rape Crisis Helpline over the last 48 hours, and they've been wishing Nikita personally their best wishes. They've been congratulating her and they've really been reflecting on what's been a difficult 2 to 3 weeks for the people we work with.
The Rape Crisis Network Ireland then calling for a quasi-boycott on products owned by or advocated for by Conor McGregor. What's your view on that?
Yeah, I think we'll need to see if there will be consequences for McGregor beyond the verdict and the damages awarded. We'll have to see if some of his sponsors or the brands he's associated with do take any actions and want to disassociate themselves from him. I think that there's going to be, obviously, as you said, Anton, there's going to be consequences for survivors themselves. We might see more people going the legal route because of what Nikita did, and specifically the civil court route. So the fact that she was in the civil court rather than the criminal court was different from the experience that anybody who has experienced sexual violence, the first step is usually the criminal court, which of course she tried to do, but then the DPP didn't take the case. So we'll have to see whether that has an effect. And then also on the public, will the case increase people's awareness of consent? That was a big issue in this trial, and the judge mentioned it a lot. And will we be a more victim-centred Cancer Society because of her experience. And we saw a lot of blame and shame being laid on her doorstep when, of course, that should never, ever be the case. So hopefully it's a time for reflection for all of us, including the brands who McGregor supports and maybe are sponsored through his name. So we'll have to see what the long-term effect really is.
Rachel, thank you very much. That's Rachel Murrough, who is CEO of the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre. Louisa, the Mail has it's claiming an exclusive interview with Nikita Hand, and they quote from her on the front page saying, "I knew that I would win. I simply told the truth." Mm-hmm. The message that it sends to other people who have been assaulted in this way and other victims of this kind of assault, in one way it says that there is justice and that you can be heard. In another, though, it says the journey to get there is a horror show. She has had an awful time.
It's harrowing. I mean, I honestly don't know if I could have done what she did so publicly. With the criminal world, if the DPP had taken the case, at least some of that would be private and her name would not have to be public. That would be her choice. The being in the courtroom would just be as difficult. But everybody in the entire country knowing about some of the medical care she had to receive afterwards, and I'm not going to go into the specifics, is harrowing. And she can never recover from that. She's a single mum, so her child has to go to school. I don't know what the age they are, but they're going to have to go to school, and their friends are going to know what happened to their mum. And that's just incredibly difficult. She's incredibly brave. You know, I was talking to you beforehand, and I think one of the challenges here for her when she went to the DPP and she said what had happened, it isn't that she wasn't believed. It was that they felt that it wasn't strong enough to get a criminal conviction. And we talk about imperfect victims, and she did. She, you know, she was intoxicated. By her own account, she went into a hotel bedroom with two men. That is a very dangerous place to be, and something very bad happened. But being an imperfect victim and putting yourself in a position of danger does not mean that you are wrong, and it does not mean that if something bad happens, it is not the fault of the person who did it, because it is always the fault of the person who acts in the wrong way, not the person who is wronged. And she has been able to stand up for herself in this situation. And I think that it is absolutely phenomenal. And I do hope it changes some of the way we talk about sexual violence in this country.
And that was a point that you were making during the break as well, Paul, that thing of the fact that there is any question about conversations, about clothing, about any of the rest of it is an anachronism of we would have thought of an attitude of 30 years ago that has long since gone.
Yeah, and Mark Tye in the Sunday Independent quotes some of the judge's comments in relation to that, particularly about young ladies wearing, you know, nice clothing, that in itself, and he says, if matters were otherwise, you would conclude that half the girls in the country who dress up nicely for parties and sending photographs themselves are putting themselves out and up for sex. Yeah. And that is not the case. So, you know, I think it must be clear here, and the Irish government have been using media to advertise having conversations about consent. Consent, what constitutes consent is consent. It's not having a few drinks, going to a hotel room, wearing sexy clothing, taking pictures of yourself and putting them on Instagram, either for boys or girls, by the way. And unfortunately, we have yet to find a proper way to discuss this in society. And this young lady, very brave, I mean, she had to take a civil case, which means her name was revealed. If had it been a
and
criminal,
all of the risk of the finances if she lost and costs against her.
And if it was a criminal case, her name would not be known unless she chose it to be known at the end. So an incredibly brave young woman going up against well-resourced legal teams who would frighten you not to take a case in the first place.
A final word to you on this, Mark.
Well, I mean, it is interesting. If he is getting PR advice, he's not listening to it, because certainly his comments in the wake of the case are doing him no favours, and a period of silence would be well advised from his point.
Yes, he released a series of grossly defamatory texts against Nikita Hand.
Yeah, and very days. And yeah, exactly, and very angry, and clearly, you know, they he has said that he's going to appeal. Now, quite what the appeal grounds are going to be limited, one would assume, and presumably will come down to some questioning of the judge's direction, although it's hard to see where the flaw could have been in any of that. But when it comes to boycotts, I mean, anybody who's buying McGregor whiskey is making a statement about themselves.
Mark Hennessy. Thank you very much, Mark Hennessy, Ireland and Britain editor with the Irish Times. Likewise, thank you very much to Louise Meehan of Woodview HRM and Paul Galler, who is general manager of Buzzwells Hotel and also the incoming chief executive of the Irish Hotels Federation. By the way, when do you become chief executive of the Irish Hotels?
6th of January.
I see. Have you a strategy laid out already, or do we have to wait until then to know what it is?
Oh, well, I think, you know, the hotel industry knows what the hotel industry needs to be successful. We just need the right politicians in front of us.
Well, we wish you the best of luck in the new position. We'll be back with the news after this break.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.